I'd like to open up the House General Government and Consumer Protection Committee for the House, Tuesday, February 22nd. Committee, we've got a few bills coming up here, and we're going to skip the first one on the agenda for right now, and we're going to move to House Bill 2855. So with that, I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2855. And Jan, would you give us just a little refresher on what this bill is about?
Chairs and members, 2855 creates a state and local government efficiency task force. It directs a task force to analyze at least the following service categories: elections, human services, natural resources, education, and criminal justice. Directs the task force to submit a final report by October 1st of 2012, and it requires the task force to use the services of permanent staff in the offices of the Governor, Secretary of State, Judicial Department, and Legislative Fiscal Office. It sunsets on February 4th of 2013, and it declares an emergency effective on passage.
Thank you. And with that, I know we have Representative Nathanson is present, and if you'd like to come up and start us off with this bill.
Thank you.
I think you had some prior involvement with this subject matter.
I did, and if you don't mind, would it be all right if I invited Sarah Miller to join me in case there are questions that she could answer?
Sarah Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I'm going to start out with something that I learned in the last process that the chair has just talked about. In the task force that just completed its work and reported to this legislative assembly, I learned one new word that is sort of a watchword that I carry with me. In fact, I've seen people wearing a button. The button says TWADI, T-T-W-W-A-D-I. That's the way we've always done it. TWADI with a big cross through it. When the 75th Assembly considered the Government Efficiency Task Force in 2009, I testified about the economic crisis that was facing Oregon and her 36 counties and an economically unsustainable system of delivering services to Oregonians. The natural tendency is for bureaucratic systems to get more complex over time and tangled up, piling one new program on top of existing programs. Years and decades of layering good ideas on top of each other, on top of previous good ideas, but never cleaning out the closet, so to speak. It's our job to periodically take a step back, look at what we've got in there, look at the whole picture, and then make adjustments to make things work better. There are about 50 kinds of service areas, from permits to water quality, animals and wildlife, and especially in human services and criminal justice, where both the state and local governments, counties, even cities and special districts, have overlapping responsibilities in delivering those kinds of services. We should look at simplification. We should look at regionalization and reorganization with an emphasis not only on saving money but improving service. There have been other efforts that are either concluded or underway right now that focus on the state. There was the previous governor's reset cabinet, for example. There are government efficiency task forces and performance excellence moves, but those are all focused on how the state works. I think we need to work on how we work with our partners. So, recognizing the need to restructure the delivery of government services, the 2009 through 10 task force, representatives of state and local governments and organizations worked together to identify areas where we could make improvements to increase efficiency, reduce costs, and in some cases, improve service and make Oregonians happier, and more satisfied with their government service. The task force itself demonstrated new ways of doing things and doing them efficiently. For example, we utilized web-based conferencing. We posted all of our task force and committee documents on a website. By the way, that was our website, not a state website. We avoided costs in that task force. It didn't actually have any fiscal because we did it all on our own with a tremendous amount of help, especially from the Association of Oregon Counties, but also from our other partners. The task force approved, that previous task force approved nearly 24 practical, achievable ideas and included those in a final report to the legislature, which, by the way, didn't become just a paper report to sit on a shelf. It was posted on the web to be read electronically. I hope that those 23 recommendations from the task force signaled the beginning of the work, not the completion or the end of work. The objective of this bill you have in front of you is to continue the collaborative effort that was started. Restructuring or reset should not be done only within the walls of state government. Work on restructuring will not achieve everything it could unless we do it with our local government partners and learn with each other how to get out of each other's way or how to work together to make something better. Journals that we, I think we probably all get copies of from time to time, Governing Magazine, state legislatures, and others, they have all reported on this topic. And the private sector and nonprofit organizations address this concept too. I find snippets of it everywhere. I was just looking through an issue of the State Independent Living Council, and one of their goals is to, quote, include collaboration and partnership activities. Everyone's talking about the need to restructure and collaborate. This task force was so enthusiastic about their work together that their last recommendation was the one that you're hearing today, to authorize the continuation of the state working with local government. Complaining doesn't fix anything. Rolling up our sleeves is what it takes. That group of people said they are still willing and eager to work with the state. I hope that you will find this bill favorable and recommend to the Legislative Assembly that we continue that effort between state and local governments. Thank you.
Thank you. And Sarah, do you wish to testify or add on to this?
Co-Chair Holvey, Co-Chair Wisnett, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Miller. I'm here today as an appointed member of the Governor's Efficiency Task Force. In my day job, I'm the Policy and Planning Division Administrator at Business Oregon. My job on the task force was to represent the impact potentially to businesses that we work with throughout Oregon in opportunities to consider efficiencies. I can tell you that I have never seen a group of passionate public servants. The members of the task force were a combination of state agency folks, local electeds, and legislative appointees. And that group of people were probably some of the smartest people I've seen come together to look at a big picture issue. And I was the person at the table who kept raising my hand saying, but we have to be specific. We don't just want a report that makes general recommendations for change. And so the set of recommendations that Representative Nathanson refers to and the 14 bills that resulted from the committee are all very specific and action-oriented. And I believe under Representative Nathanson's leadership, if this task force continues in the future, you will see continued efforts. Because when you put incredibly smart people together in a room to solve problems, the collective leadership and the conversations they were willing to have with each other about things that had been formerly potentially off limits was really inspiring as a young person in government. And I believe if we can't do it in a time of fiscal constrained nature, have those tough conversations, we're never going to have them. And so it seems to me now more than ever that the work of the Efficiency Task Force needs to continue, and the partnership that's built as a result of gathering those people together needs to continue, and I am happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Questions from the committee? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, you briefed this committee in the interim on your results of last year's study, and I would really appreciate, I'll ask my office, I'd like to have further discussions with you. One of the things I'm really concerned about is we did have 14 bills coming forth. I remember in that interim discussion, there were some things you said, well, you were looking at systems and not able to do some things that I asked about. So I'd like to further discuss this. We want to move this. Everyone supports it. But I'd like to, because the thing that concerns me is having a great mission statement and an action plan. And I'm not sure the bill does that at this point. Your results of are to be commended of what we have. I'd like to talk to you further about that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, thank you for your testimony, and forgive me for asking the very clumsy question, because I'm new. It just seems like a task force of 18 people for to examine government efficiency seems a little ironic. Aside from the recommendation to continue the task force, can you tell us a little bit about some of the other things that you've done in the committee?
Certainly. I have a list of the specific recommendations that the task force came up with. Thank you. Assessment and taxation. We found specific areas in the statute, excuse me, Mr. Chair, this is how I'll answer, and members of the committee, we are transforming what in statute required literally hard copy manual processes. It's going to require a statute to change that so that we can do some of these things electronically and through automated processes. One of them has to do with the way that large industrial property values are evaluated and then considered. When there are appeals, the appeals start at the local level. 95 or 98% of the time, those were basically just passed on to a state court then who had to start the process all over, so it was felt that this was redundant, unnecessary activity at the local level, yet it was very costly and it was also time-consuming and an aggravation for the parties involved who were trying to make the appeal. So get that straightened out. Another example is when you have local police or sheriffs who are called to testify in court, they're subpoenaed, there's an awful lot of time spent waiting, and then sometimes those things are delayed or held over. It costs local governments a lot of money in overtime. Meanwhile, while the officers are waiting for the court appearance, they don't even have access to the internet. They can't be working on reports they need to file. They can't be working on anything else that they should be, you know, or could be doing. So how do we straighten out, is there a more effective way of scheduling officer time in court? That came from the Criminal Justice Subcommittee. We organized ourselves into five subcommittees to look at different areas. Another example is county jails. We found that counties had a pretty darn good and thorough way of auditing jails for oversight and auditing purposes, how jails were run. The statute required the state to do a similar type of audit. The state audit is actually not nearly as effective as the audit that the counties were doing themselves. It was not you audit your own jail, of course. But we found, why are we doing this duplicated audit? It's totally unnecessary. There's already a perfectly good audit that's being done. So there's another statute suggesting that we get rid of that duplication. And we just found that the more you look and the more you talk with each other, once you start to develop a level of trust and you feel free to talk together, you realize that some of those turf barriers come down and you realize maybe there really is a better way of doing this. So those were an example, four or five of the specific activities. And I can send your office or everybody a copy of that list of those recommendations.
Could Chair Hovey, Representative Sheehan, if I might add, from my perspective, I probably knew the least about the assessment and taxation subject matter. That was the subcommittee that I sat on. But that was a real benefit because I asked questions that led to practical, pragmatic answers. So when I first got appointed to the committee, I said to members of my office, really, all those people to study efficiency in government? It seems not very efficient. But the benefit of having the small work groups together with people who were both subject matter experts and not was collectively the set of recommendations that came forward was much more pragmatic than, in my opinion, they would have been if it was just experts studying the topics individually.
And Representative Nathanson, wasn't the bill that this committee's heard a couple of those efficiency bills already, the motor pool, I believe the library?
That's right.
Those were both recommendations from the task force as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, the members of your task force, did you consider having anyone from the private world set on that, or one of the associations that represent private industries, or did we invite Jack Welch or someone from Microsoft or Intel
Jack Welch for sure
to participate?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I don't think we specifically...
They're the customer of government.
That's correct. We did not specify that, but I'd also mention that these are governor's appointments, and I'm looking right now for the bill.
Good, you have. You may.
And... I'm looking to see if there's room for an at-large appointee from the governor's office. And I think
we
that's
can talk
an
more about
excellent
that. Thank
suggestion.
You.
Thank you for raising
and follow
that.
And follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
And how about education? Did someone from the education department set us, because that's, again, one of the governor's seven agencies. Was there one from education?
Mr. Chair and Representative, education was not within the purview of the last task force. We limited it on purpose in that recommendation to just four or five, depending on how you define them, topic areas, rather than
that's
try
a friendly amendment then to put education.
Do the whole world. The previous one did not work on education. The one that's being recommended to you now actually removes assessment and taxation because of two reasons. One, we felt like we turned over a lot of turf and established some relationships where those efficiencies will continue to percolate because the people have been working together. We took that one away, and in the bill you're considering now, we added education and natural resources because from what we heard from both state and local parties is that there was an awful lot that ought to be considered there for improvement.
Thank you. And we'll talk. I just, you know, that's half of our budget, so I think there should be, surely someone from education should be there because it affects everything. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, and I note that on page 2 of the bill, on line 4, that education is in this bill.
Yeah, but not a member, though. Unless the governor selected that.
Right. So, any other questions from the committee? Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, I want to point out that this last interchange is how we got to 18, and I know as you were going through this in the last session, it was that seems like a lot, but you're missing something. And so what you got to add is the following. And so mostly, I just want to say thanks, and I don't disagree with what we've heard, but I think the work you've done is some of the better work we've seen around here in my very brief tenure around here. I think it's great.
And I will note that one of the governors shall appoint seven members from state agencies and departments other than the governor's office. So I think he's the capacity to appoint somebody from education is definitely in there. Any other questions, Representative Clem?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One thing I wanted to, talk about is once the recommendations are turned into bills, I think it might be helpful to assign the people who worked on it to do some outreach to the relevant committees where they end up. Because I got one in my committee, and I still don't yet have the answers I need. That's why we're not hearing it yet, because we, in my co-chair, and I try and figure out what it is first. And I know somebody sent me a Google Doc. I can't open that. I had to try to make an email. I can't do that. I don't know if the Farm Bureau is on board or not with this thing. That's the kind of stuff that will help committee chairs, when they're trying to figure out whether these are good ideas and whether everybody was talked to. Because I still don't know exactly what a farm board. I know the assessors didn't want a farm board anymore. I don't know if the farmers like their farm board. And I'm, the ag committee, so I care a lot, usually more about the farmer than some other people sometimes.
Thanks. Co-Chair Holby, Co-Chair Resnick, members of the committee, Representative Clem, I worked on the Assessment and Taxation Subcommittee. That bill that you're referring to came out of there, and I will personally take the action item to ensure that John Phillips from the Department of Revenue and I come and see you to talk about the specifics of that particular bill. Things are moving crazy fast, and so we're doing our best, but that's a fair request.
Thank you so much for your testimony, and Representative Nathanson, thank you for your efforts in this arena. It has really, I think you've produced some great work along with your task force, and look forward to working on it in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Next up on House Bill 2855, we have Denny Doyle and Brenda Wilson. And Linda Morrell and Kathy Eaton. Well, let's just do two at a time. Since the other two haven't got up there yet, we'll start with two. Well, welcome, and introduce yourself for the record, please.
Denny Doyle, Mayor, City of Beaverton. Co-Chair Hovey, representatives, I just appreciate the time to wake you up a little bit this morning. The task force was ably led, very effective, and having sat through task force in both the private sector and public sector, it was one of the most dynamic groups I've had the pleasure to work with. Staff really delivered material at the committee level as well as the subcommittee level, and that's, of course, the subcommittee level is where the activity really happened. It was interesting to watch the different folks and the different interests try to come forward and actually come to compromise and put forth things that we thought as a group we could actually help you get it done. It wasn't high-in-the-sky opportunism, and I just was fascinated by the process and became a real believer, skeptical at the onset, because that is a large group. But I think when we got into the subcommittees, they were very effective and took on real issues that will save state and county's money. I learned more about the county assessor's office than I probably ever care to know, but it was a great education for me, and I think that we found the teamwork was invaluable, and I would really like to see this continue and add different pieces and different opportunities to help us make things more efficient, because it does trickle down, and it goes out saying today we can't do anything alone anymore. We have to be group, regional, whatever it takes to get tasks done effectively and save the taxpayers' dollars. I just would hope that we can take the good suggestions we've heard this morning and make this even a more strategic and impactful committee. You know, any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Holvey, Chair Wisnett, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brenda Wilson, and I am the Intergovernmental Relations Manager for the City of Eugene, and I'll be very, very brief this morning. First, thank you for the opportunity to present testimony on House Bill 2855. The City of Eugene is in support of 2855, with our city's budget and our revenues declining, as with many other cities, and the demand for services increasing. It is imperative that we look for innovative ways to streamline government and make more efficiencies, and we can only do so much within the city. Being able to partner with the state and other local governments, we think, is imperative for us to be able to look for bigger and better efficiencies. We think that a task force such as the one that is being recommended by Representative Nathanson under her leadership is a good idea and will provide the opportunity for looking for those bigger and better efficiencies. So, again, we support House Bill 2855, and I really appreciate the opportunity to get our position on the record.
Thank you. Questions? Not seeing any. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thanks for coming up.
And next up, Kathy Eaton and Linda Morrell. Hopefully I pronounced your name correctly.
Modrell.
Modrell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Did you want to go first?
You'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Eaton. I'm the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I bring a little different perspective this morning in support of 2855. I'm just not a member of the committee. However, I attended all of the sessions of the GETF. I received the minutes of the subcommittees, and I monitored the decision-making actions with regard to the recommendations. From the outset, one of the primary goals of the task force was not only to consider and present viable ways of providing public services more efficiently, effectively, and economically, but also to follow up on its recommendations. Members agreed at the first meeting that producing a report that would gather dust on the shelf was not worth their dedicated efforts, and you've heard some of that already this morning. Some of the recommendations have been converted into legislative proposals. Some of those hopefully will move forward. However, in the interest of continuing to find ways where state and local service providers can more effectively work together and evaluate the enacted recommendations, the League believes that the task force should be continued. Bringing about change, particularly in entrenched areas of local and state service programs, will not be easy nor particularly rapid. However, the end results for the taxpayers as well as the providers merit moving forward with the task force recommendations and hopefully giving it the opportunity to monitor what gets enacted and to see what's continuing with their ideas and with the progress that can be made, we believe, very effectively at the local level. Some of the recommendations are very good. One that we've been interested in is the fact that there's a problem with jails, around county jails around the state, who do not really have the availability to serve women well who are incarcerated. And one of the ideas is that there could be one of the jails, a county jails in a region, who would accept the women, and it would be a more effective way of working with that population and allowing the regional cooperation. But in any event, we really believe that the task force should be continued. We recognize that there is a fiscal impact, but we hope that it can be moved forward. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Linda Madrell. I'm a Benton County Commissioner and also a member of the task force in question. I just wanted to share with you my thoughts on what the situation is and how the task force contributed to a more effective delivery of government services. Cost-effective and efficient services, government services, are the very least that the Oregon taxpayers can expect. Nevertheless, it is true that effectiveness and efficiency are not necessarily the case, good intentions and dedication to public service notwithstanding. Reasons for failure to critically examine and re-examine processes and programs are many and include a reluctance to examine the status quo because of a lack of resources and time, difficulty in seeing a program or a process with fresh eyes, piling on of regulation after regulation, creating a geologic strata similar to rock faces that are exposed in road building that are caused by the federal government, sometimes this legislature, and this is the way it's always been done attitude. Also, a reluctance to upset complex systems and the people that are working in it. And I can't overemphasize the complexity of some of these systems and the interrelationships. And the challenge of collaboration. Collaboration is an easy word to throw around, but it's not so easy to affect. All the parties have to have the same goal in mind, and turf cannot be a question. County commissioners have long known that it isn't just the need for money so much as keeping complex shared service systems balanced. When they get out of balance without regard for how much money is put in the individual parts, you create a problem. Reducing red tape is a big issue, and eliminating unnecessary bureaucracy. We can do better with the money that we have. The situation is exacerbated by two relentless and inevitable forces, the unsustainability and broken property tax financing system for local government and the uncertainty of the federal forest payments that are a huge issue for Oregon counties. We must continue the work of the County Services Planning Council, which was recommended by the Governor's Task Force on the Federal Forest Payments, and the State and Local Government Efficiency Task Force, which serves it as its umbrella. It is one of the best tools that we have to examine better and more cost-effective ways to deliver necessary services, to look at what's the appropriate way role of state and local governments in service delivery, and the identification of the most important and the least important necessary services. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony and sharing your perspective on the work of this task force. I think it's good that we had some other people weighing in on this from local government and somebody from the public as well. So I really appreciate your testimony and appreciate you participating as well in this task force.
Oh, and I didn't mention the Association of Counties does support continuation of this.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yes.
Any other questions? Not seeing any. Again, thank you very much for your testimony. Committee, as we need to examine the fiscal and have some discussions about that, we're not going to move this bill at this point. And the co-chairs of the committee, I think, will talk about this bill a little bit. And hopefully we'll see it back in front of the committee soon. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2855 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2958. Jan, would you give us a little description of House Bill 2958?
Chair Holvey, Chair Wisnett, members, 2958. Requires the Department of Consumer and Business Services to compile and submit a report annually to the Legislative Assembly regarding the funds dispersed or distributed in Oregon under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. It specifies that DCBS shall identify the business entities that received the funds, and it shall categorize the businesses with particular attention to the following business types: minority-owned, women-owned, emerging small, and disadvantaged. Sunsets on January 2nd of 2014, and it declares an emergency effective on passage.
Thank you. We have Representative Lou Fredericks.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning. If you'd identify yourself for the record, if you'd like somebody to come up with you, that'd be great.
Thank you. Good morning. Chairs, co-chairs Holvey and Wisnett, members of the committee, I'm Representative Lou Frederick from House District 43, that's North and Northeast Portland. I've introduced two bills this session aimed at addressing the problem of relatively low levels of economic activity in minority communities. It's not only that unemployment rates far outpace those of the larger community, with unemployment rates among black males 18 to 35 now estimated at close to 50% in my district. It is also that minority businesses struggle to get a foothold in the economy in which others have a head start. The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the stimulus program, was designed to stimulate the economy by putting people to work so that they can spend in the businesses in their communities, while also building needed public infrastructure. More than anything else, businesses need business, not handouts, and putting their customers to work increases economic activity rather quickly. It has also been observed that when the economy sneezes, the black community gets pneumonia. There are a number of explanations for that. Most prominent is the fact that economic robustness is cumulative, and the black community in Oregon simply has a shorter history, particularly if you take into account the delays imposed by the policies of the past, including exclusion laws, redlining, and urban renewal programs that resulted in displacement of both businesses and residents. Other minority groups have some of the same problems as well as some of their own. More recently, there have been minority contracting goals, but it's not always been clear how those contracts were distributed. Reporting often aggregated data in ways that it made it hard to know which groups were making progress and which were not. For example, Minority women and emerging small businesses were aggregated, so it was unclear in reports whether these classifications were sharing the business of public contracts equitably. When contracts to minority groups were broken out from NWESB contracts, they remained an aggregation of all minority groups, and it was unclear as to whether the various groups were sharing the business of public contracts equitably. Some reports identified numbers of contracts without specifying the size of the contracts. Treating a small contract of $1,000 to a minority business as equal to a multi-million dollar contract to a large established firm. HB 2958 simply asks for a report on the stimulus program that gives us a true picture of how some of the communities hardest hit by the recession have benefited from the program. I ask for an amendment to ask for Business Oregon rather than DCBS to research and compile this report because that department is primarily responsible for administering the program and should have an easier access to the data. With me right now is Maurice Romming. He is the president of O'Neill Electric, about 15 million dollar electrical contracting firm in Southeast Portland.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm Maurice Romming. I'm president of O'Neill Electric. I'm also president of the National Association of Minority Contractors, representing about 65 contractors throughout the entire state. We employ probably about 60 people right now, and we think that this initiative is a good one only because we have not seen those funds actually receive go to our communities. Although we continue to do work, we have not, as far as the ARRA funds, it's questionable on who received that. So we'd like to see this be initiated only to see what the results are so that we can better improve our state and include all contractors. Thank you.
Thank you. Question is Representative Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks for bringing this bill. Representative Frederick, I think you and I have had the conversation to some degree that a related element of this is sort of the geographic overlay and the near and dear to my heart because if you look at I think the Portland Tribune reported that although 20% of the population lives East 82nd in Portland, only 1.8% of the stimulus dollars were spent there, and that resulted in some controversy that unfortunately not enough powerful people paid attention to. My understanding, but I've never seen it, is that under the federal act there are significant transparency requirements about for Congress and for the president, whatever. So it makes me think that maybe this data is available. What do we know about the availability of the data already, and is this just asking us to put it in a way that we can understand?
It is, in fact, from what I understand, it is supposed to be available. One of the problems, again, is the disaggregation that takes place. We've had situations where there have been a contract for, say, $300 million for some sort of road. There'll be $3,000 that will be given to three minority contractors, and they'll say, look, we've got this. There'll be maybe four other contractors general contractors or whatever on that particular project. They'll identify a great number of minority contractors. Look at the high percentage we have, when in fact the amount is different. We need to be tracking that and really separating it out so that people we can really see just who's getting it and how much they're getting.
Thanks. Yeah, and let me just say that it's in my experience of, and I also know Maurice, and my experience of the intent of where you're headed here and where I think would be valuable is not, as you said, sort of so we can make sure the proper handouts were made, but so that we can do the proper analysis to make sure the proper meritorious choices were made and that it wasn't made based on sort of backroom deals and stupidity. But anyway, so I appreciate the spirit with which you bring it.
Thank
you. Other questions? Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On this testimony that it mentions in the third paragraph, it talks about businesses that receive funding that are certified as disadvantaged minority women or emerging small businesses by the state's Office of Minority Women and Emerging Small Business. Do we require that someone of color or register or become certified, or is this? I'm just concerned that there would be people that fall into these categories that aren't certified, and that if we're using that as the metric for success for this, is this just justification for that agency?
Chairs Holy and Wisnett and Representative Sheehan, no, not all, by no means are all minority small businesses registered or certified under this particular thing. This is a way, though, of tracking it. It's not requiring that anyone be involved in that, but it's a way of tracking it. It's something we already have the data for. So we wouldn't have to go and try to get more on that. It would help us at least give a glimpse. And in many cases, and certainly with NAMCO and a number of the other groups, the Oregon Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs is also often part of this group. So we would be able to find out. But by no means are all the folks who are minority and women-owned small businesses certified. Many of them are, though.
But is that, Chair, follow-up? But is that targeted in this bill? Because it seems like in the testimony it's saying that that's the one we're measuring. It's not necessarily just the categories. It's those that are certified.
Well, right now it would be good to have just those numbers available. And trying to track the others would be good to find out whether they are, in fact, involved.
One of the things I'd like to say is that by going by the certification, it's a verification process, so we know that those firms that are certified are also verified by the state that they are minority owned by at least 51%. And so it gives us the assurance that we are actually putting the allocations in the right location.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Other questions?
Tim Conger.
Can you explain a little bit more about which agency would be tracking this? I noticed that in our bill summary from committee staff, it says that the governor established the Economic Recovery Executive Team, to coordinate and track the infusion of federal stimulus dollars into Oregon. And then I noticed in your testimony, Representative Frederick, that you mentioned that there was potentially an amendment to... It was in the other testimony. Anyway, an amendment that would have Business Oregon conduct this survey. Just curious, where's the best place to do it, and maybe the cheapest, the most efficient?
And that is exactly why we put the amendment in there. Business Oregon, in fact, is tracking things much more closely than the Department of Consumer and Business Services. They have that data. I just finished talking with a couple of folks here. We're going to be talking later on how they can best get that information. But that's why it was put in. When the bill was originally drafted, they suggested the Department of Consumer and Business Services, but it's clear that Business Oregon is the best place for us to get that information.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I know that that information is, the -1 amendment is, I believe, in our S drive, so we do have that amendment in hand that does transfer to Oregon Business Development Department. So, seeing no other questions from the committee, I'm going to ask one. So, on these ERA funds, were there... to the best of your knowledge, was there a directive in those ERA funds that some of these dollars would go to minority and contractors, or give them some sort of opportunity to win these awards?
You want to answer?
Yes, I can. I think we both have the same answer. Yes, there was, Chair Holby. There was an expectation that there would be some direction to minority and especially hardest hit communities.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, where is this at this point? There was an attempt at transparency, but it was not as detailed as it might, and that's what we're asking for within this bill.
So to follow up with that, Representative, do we have access to that directive that ERA sent out with these funds?
We should be able to get that.
Very easy.
It'd be great to be able to have that for our documentation as well.
Okay.
Any other questions? Not seeing you. Thank you for bringing this bill forward. Thank you for the discussion and I hope we are able to achieve some better transparency on the use of the dollars that the government receives and puts out to awards for contracts and other things. I think it's important that we take a look at this.
Thank you very much. Thank you, committee.
Thank you.
Next up, I have Gerald Floyd. Paul Grove. Good morning, gentlemen. If you would identify yourselves for the record, please.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Grove. I'm the Government Relations Manager with Business Oregon. Appreciate the opportunity to come before you today. As was mentioned in the previous testimony, within our financial services section at Business Oregon, we do administer the Minority Women and Emerging Small Business Program to promote targeted contracting business opportunities. Excuse me. And we do have a certifying role with those business firms and keep an inventory of those firms that have been certified. So we do have the ability to do a cross-check and a reference to assist in getting to the data that the representative is looking to ascertain. I'm fortunate to have Gerald with me today because he can explain in much greater detail than I could hope to imagine the statewide ARRA program and the disbursements of the funds and what's taken place at the governor's office with respect to that. I can speak individually with the activities that we've undertaken at the department level in terms of the tracking that we've undertaken. And specifically, we were asked to administer safe drinking water and CDBG funds, approximately $29 million, went to about 23 projects, and we were able to track the prime and subcontractors with respect to those projects. And again, I can't speak for the other entities or agencies that were involved with the ARRA funds and their reporting process, but I do know what we were able to track at the department level. I think the one thing that we want to be mindful of at Business Oregon is to recognize the activities that the governor's office has undertaken with respect to this and be as helpful as possible and assist in providing the information that we have with those certified business firms, but also to not duplicate the activities that they've already undertaken, but rather best supplement and support the information that they have so that we can get to the information that the representative is seeking. So I think with that, I'll pass it on to Gerald.
Morning.
Good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Gerald Floyd. I'm the Director of Recovery Act Management for the Economic Recovery Executive Team. Our office was created by Governor Kulongoski to track the ARRA's projects as they were coming into the state. Our office originally had a much greater role in regards to policy and how these funds were going to be utilized, and has transferred into more of the oversight related to the reporting aspect of the data and the requirements for the federal government under the Act. Just to give you a little background, within the ARRA world and awards that came into the state, it's important to understand the scope of our office is looking at what we call state-managed grants, and those are the awards that were made directly to state agencies. There are also federal direct, as we call them, grants that go directly to counties, cities, businesses, nonprofits, etc. Those are where the federal agency makes an award directly to that county or city, for example. But our scope is looking at just those awards that came into state agencies and ensuring that the reporting requirements under Section 1512 of the Act, that all of that reporting is done on time. Section 1512 requires each recipient to report data every quarter within 10 days of the quarter end. That was initially a challenge. We're working with agencies. Our fiscal month doesn't even close within 10 days, and so getting that information and getting it collected and reported to the federal government within that 10 days was a monumental task, but we now do that with relative ease. The agencies being the facilitator of that in getting the information to our office. Within the 1512 reporting, we do both the prime and subrecipient information as part of that. The Act also requires us to break out any payments that are made to vendors that exceed $25,000. There is another component with aggregated data for vendor payments less than $25,000, but we don't get a listing of who those vendors are. But we do get the specific information related to any payments made over $25,000. There are additional funds that come into the state besides the 1512. Those are awards typically related to entitlement programs such as unemployment, TANF, some child support grants. That data does not get collected because we don't report that to the federal government. We do get some total information about how much has actually gone out, but those are, again, payments direct to individuals. They're not contracting type situations. So the scope of the data that we have is related to the activities of the state agencies, and we would be happy to work with the members of the committee and the Oregon Business Development Department to provide that information in a way that would be useful to do a comparison with the data that they have around the minority businesses that have been certified and be able to assist in that manner. And we would be happy to assist in any other way that we can.
Thank you. It occurs to me, just a question for you, would it be more practical for the governor's office to compile the information requested in this bill, or would it best be done by Business Oregon?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, that is a tricky question in that the function of our office and the funding source that we have is specific to the oversight of the requirements under ARRA. With that, I would say that it would definitely be in our best interest to participate, but I would not speak to whether or not that would be best served by the governor's office.
Okay, that was a trick question. Any other questions? Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you guys both have lists. You have a question from Representative Frederick. Can you guys just give him this information? Do we need a statute for this?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Representative Sheehan, this data is publicly available. It is data that is already provided on the Oregon Recovery site under a mapping process that we have, not in a true listing type format, but you can go on there and all of the information is directly from what we have collected and reported to the federal government. Again, we would be happy to participate in any way. I became aware of this bill actually on Friday night when Paul called me. So we have the information. We'd be happy to share it with whoever someone would like it.
Okay, sure. So the answer is yes?
Yes.
So do we need the statute? Can you just get this information?
Co-chairs and members of the committee, for the data that the Economic Recovery Executive Team has, we do not require a statute to be able to provide that information.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Smith.
Yeah, so I think I heard what you said, and I don't know that I have the question I would have answered, which is the data. The data you said that we don't need a statute to provide the data that we have.
Correct.
Okay. So the question is there an easy way to get the data, or is there a way to get the data that is being requested, with or without a statute? Right. What does that take? Right. What I heard when we asked sort of a related question, and I think, you know, Representative Sheehan's question is a good one, which what I heard, I think, was, well, disaggregation. It's put into fields and into categories that doesn't answer all the questions that we've got. We need to, you know, have the ability to put it in different categories or have it put in those different categories, you know, for the world. What would it take to get the data in the format that can be used to answer the questions that are being asked? Yeah, what does it take to do that?
Co-chair, member of the committee, Representative Smith. The one thing that I was trying to convey in the scope of the data that we have is specific to those vendors with activity with individual payments of greater than $25,000.
You said is or isn't?
We do have that
you
data,
have. Okay.
Yes. And we can provide that in Excel, XML, a number of different formats that could be used to compare and analyze the information with the Oregon Business Development Department. The limitation that I want to make sure that you understand is that information is limited to only those state-managed awards and only those vendors with payments over $25,000. If you're looking for a award that went to a county and how did they contract and who did they contract with, we do not have that information because our office is not responsible for reporting that to the federal government.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, please. What percentage, and if you said this, I apologize, I missed it, what percentage of the overall awards were done by the state? So how much of the answer can we get, you know, versus things were done county? I don't know, maybe things done directly from the feds or some other way that I'm not thinking of.
Co-chairs, member of the committee, Representative Smith, off the top of my head, when you look at the website from the federal government, usaspending.gov, they indicate that about $5.5 billion came to Oregon under the ARRA legislation. Of that, roughly $4 billion came to the state either for 1512 or non-1512 awards, again, some of them being entitlement programs that we don't report on the data. So there is a percentage that are federal direct, but the majority of them came into the state. Of that number, 1512 comprised about $2.6 billion worth of awards. And of that, 1.9 has already been spent. And so we do have a small percentage, roughly 30%, that we are still in the process of spending.
The final, please. Thanks, Chair. So maybe, and I don't know if Representative Frederick will want to come up and respond to the question of statute versus just a request, but I guess what I would say is, without any further information, what I'd say is, get everything we can get and give it to them. And if for some reason that feels slow, then I know what it's like to be a representative and, you know, you got a hammer and the only thing you see is a nail and that's we're going to pass a bill and I'd be down to help, right, if it doesn't seem like we're getting the information we need to get. And I don't know, you know, there may be other things I'm missing. I think Representative Sheehan's question is a good one. Anyway, that's what I know about that.
Co-chairs, Representative Smith, I think that's a good point. And I think the one thing that the Business Oregon, working with the governor's office, can do is see what that baseline of information is that we have reported at the state level, do the cross-check against those certified business firms that we have worked with the proponents of the bill, see where we stand with respect to that, and then move forward accordingly on those.
Thanks.
No other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. With that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2958 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3032.
And possible work session.
One at a time. Jan, would you give us a little refresher of the bill?
Chair Tolby, Chair Wisnett, and members. House Bill 3032, it allows a county court or board of commissioners to examine the county's financial affairs twice each year rather than specifically in January and July. There is no revenue impact and there is no fiscal impact.
So we have Representative Berger and Janet Carlson. Good morning, and if you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Co-Chair Holdy, Co-Chair Wisnett, State Representative Vicki Berger from District 20. You're in it.
Thank you for your patience.
Thank you for being here. I bring you today what is basically a bit of a housekeeping measure. A lot about our county system has grown over time, and it has some oddities. And this little piece of statute, I think, appropriately requires that the sort of presiding officers of counties examine the books of the clerk, who's independently elected, the treasurer, and the sheriff. These, and in the cases where the county court, the judge system in a few of our counties is operative, these elected county officers need to have their books examined, and the Board of Commissioners is certainly, by the statute, authorized to do that and should do that, and we have no complaint with that. But the statute specified that it had to be in January and July. And I think our counties are capable of deciding independently when is the time to examine their own books and the books of these offices. So the only change that we are specifying in here, that instead of being January and July when they examine these books, that it be two times a year, and they can decide which two times a year. That is the simple change that we are proposing here. I have brought with me Janet Carlson, who is my Marion County Commissioner and a former member of this body, and she brought this to me, and I'm happy to let her explain further.
Good morning.
Good morning. Co-Chair Holvey, Co-Chair Wisnett, members of the committee, Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner, and I have the privilege also this year of serving as the President of the Association of Oregon Counties. So as Representative Berger graciously agreed to put forward this bill, and it is a bit of a housekeeping bill, as she said, I've handed you a memo that I got as Chair of the Board of Commissioners. We rotate in Marion County, so I was Chair last year. I'm in the third position this year from our legal counsel saying that we were not in compliance with Oregon law because we had sort of fallen out of the habit, I guess, of conducting the semi-annual review of books and records required by statute. And then I left the attachments on so that you could see what that looked like 16 years ago, and it really is pretty telling how far we've come in, well, I guess 15 years ago, since 1996, how that was done in the past. We currently have computers, very sophisticated financial systems, and I got an email from one of our county administrators around the state who said that it seems to me this is an anachronism in an age of automated accounting systems. We no longer have books and warrants and vouchers and, you know, and things that people need to bring forward twice a year. I was just doing a quick tally in Marion County. We do our budget annually at the county. We have probably 5-6 full days of budget presentations where every department comes for anywhere from a half an hour to 3 or 4 or 5 hours, depending on the size of the department. And in those presentations, the county clerk, the county treasurer, the sheriff, and all of our other non-elected officials present their revenues and the expenditures for their department. We have a quarterly report that we get, and we just had a quarterly budget meeting last week where our finance department goes on the computer, and we have benchmarks for every quarter to see where we're at financially in terms of revenues and expenditures and how we're meeting those benchmarks. Our treasurer routes investment summary monthly that the board reviews and brings that from time to time as interest rates get lower and lower to try to talk to us about what's going on. And we meet weekly in management update meetings where our sheriff and our clerk participate during the year to kind of give us the nuances and of what's going on financially and programmatically in their departments. So I guess my point is that as commissioners, I think it's great that we have a statute that allows us to call for those presentations twice a year, and if something were untoward, to be able to actually produce the documentation that goes along with what's in the financial systems. However, we would prefer to have the flexibility to do it on a time schedule. And I do have to say parenthetically that we are having this presentation tomorrow morning at our board session, and it's February, so we're still out of compliance. I guess that was the first that we could actually get people together. So being a recovering legislator, rather than saying, well, how do we continue to do this in January and July, I sent an email to us, the association, and said, could we get the law changed? And here we are today. Thank you. And I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? It seems like a pretty basic concept that people don't have questions to, but since your affiliation with the Association of Oregon Counties was stated, are they in support of this bill?
Yes, the association is in support of the bill, and we did send out an email to our county administrators who would probably have the most heartburn about making changes to statute that deal with finances, and everyone was very supportive of making the change. Everyone that we heard from.
Well, with that, I appreciate you bringing a simple housekeeping bill to a committee that seems to understand it completely.
Sometimes, Mr. Co-Chair, things are as simple as they appear, but rarely. Thank you very much.
You bet. I appreciate you bringing this forward. So with that, there's no one else, anyone else wishing to testify on this bill? House Bill 3032. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3032 and open a work session on House Bill 3032.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
I recommend House Bill 3032 be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 3032 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Seeing none, Tamara, would you please call the roll?
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Clowns?
Aye.
Representative
Conner? Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sayed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Co-Chair Wisnett?
Aye. This one?
Yeah.
Co-Chair Holt? Yeah. Aye. House Bill 3032, having received the required votes, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And we could either put this on the consent calendar. Representative Berger, would you like to carry this on the floor?
It's fine, yes.
You would like to do that. I think it deserves being mentioned that we're doing something that makes government more efficient. And I'm sure you could accomplish that.
Mr. Chair, I am a great objector to consent calendar, so I would be proud to carry this on the floor.
Boy, do I walk into that and walk right back out. So with that, Representative Berger will carry the bill on the floor, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 3032. Committee, we will stand at ease for a minute or two.